the conversation of how we treat the planet is ongoing, with issues like consumption, use, climate change, and many more. We are a species constantly grappling with how we live and coexist. The conversation should be had in all facets of activity and endeavor, and today we have it in the arts with one of Florida's emerging eco and environmental artists. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and today, like every day, we are joined with an incredibly special guest. Today's guest is going to help me have a conversation that I've been wanting to have for a while. And this conversation is going to be contextualized through their work. Joining me today is one of Florida's dominant and emerging eco and environmental artists, Moe Hewitt. Thank you for joining us, Moe.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Moe, I just want to jump right into this conversation. And just so the audience gets a feel for what it is, when we say eco art or environmental art, what does that mean to somebody like you who's proficient in it at this point?
Yeah, for me, it means somebody who works with the environment to talk about ecological issues. So personally, I use natural materials in my work to create expanded forms of painting to talk about local ecological issues.
Sure. You know what? That's a perfect thing that you gave me there, a perfect segue, because ecology is like the relationship, if I'm not mistaken, between something and its environment. Am I right by thinking that?
Yeah,
or by saying that? And so the ecology of the art, is it the relationship between you and the audience? And then the stuff that you're using or the stuff that you're researching, is it its relationship between where you find it and what you're going to do with it?
Yeah, I would say primarily, first off, it starts as a relationship between myself and the materials that I'm using. That's where I kind of find my inspiration initially. And then once I find that inspiration within a specific material, I kind of do a deep dive on that plant matter and looking at how that plant functions in its local area. And so then it hopefully inspires the audience to form their own relationships with the land around them.
And you're in the perfect state for it. Florida, which is just one of the most biodiverse states in the union, if not the most, and then Tallahassee, which is one of the most biodiverse areas of that state. Are you ever at a loss for found materials, or where do you even find your materials? Do you forage? Do you rummage? Do you let them come to you if you're walking in the park and you see something? What is that process like for you?
Yeah, definitely. It starts with just a walk. And, you know, this walk changes locations. I typically go around the Lake Henrietta Trail, but then I kind of go off the trail as well and just find materials that draw me in.
Yeah.
That can be like the shape or the texture or color. But as long as I find enough of it, so it's always got to be plentiful, you know, because I never want to take just, you know, the little bit of something that's there. You know, you always want to make sure you're leaving a good amount so that you're not killing things off. But yeah, that's how I typically find stuff.
The part of this conversation that has really, well, there's a lot of this conversation that I'm going to enjoy having, but one of them that I don't get to talk about enough on this programming, sometimes because it's so fast-paced or retrospective, is sustainability, right? Let's talk about not just the principle, but how you incorporate it. Is sustainable art or sustainable practices something that are important to you?
Definitely. So I actually started off as a traditional landscape painter, and I was using acrylics and oils and, you know, traditional canvas that I bought from the store. And I started to think about, you know, I'm painting nature because I love it so much, but the processes that I'm using are actually harmful to nature. And so I started doing things like creating my own paint from soil and my own inks as well. And then I got into like making my work more three-dimensional, so kind of using like vines and tree bark and things like that to create a more, I guess, sculptural painting. But by doing this, you know, I'm lessening my my artist's footprint, because sure. I was thinking, like, my work doesn't need to last hundreds and hundreds of years. It can be ephemeral, and the time that it's here, it's, you know, it has its life, and I think that adds some type of, I guess, poeticness to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't need to just accumulate.
Yeah, it kind of makes it valiant.
Right. It can have its life and then die off and make room for more art to exist.
To exist. I love the way that I've never thought about like that like that. Sometimes painting these landscapes that we adore so much, the materials that we're using to paint them with are detrimental to what we're painting. And
right.
So by the time you're finished, you have like a amortized legacy to the piece, because no matter how much somebody enjoys it, there's a little debt that has to be paid off.
Right.
That's, how long does it take you to make, did it take you to make your own inks and paints? And is that an easy process, or was that something that became its own art in its own way?
Yeah, I definitely love the process. I kind of fell in love with the process more so than making a painting itself. But no, it's a fairly easy process for inks. It's a lot of boiling, like berries, or I love to make pine cone ink as well. That's mm-hmm. just like boiling down the materials. And then a pigment is different because it's a, I guess the word I'm looking for is like a dust or something like levitated mm-hmm. in the binder. And so that's kind of the difference. But yeah, it's just a pretty simple process of washing the dirt and getting it down to its like fine pigments, and then just adding a binder.
Absolutely. Let's pivot for a second. As I was doing research on you, and as I was researching this issue more so that I could have more arrows in my quiver, one of the words that I kept coming about was ecofeminism. And yeah. Not only was I curious to no extent, the more I dived into it, the less I understood it, for beautiful reasons, you know, because there's just so much to it and there's so many moving parts. Is your work in any way ecofeminine?
Yeah, I would say so.
Sure.
And the way that I understand ecofeminism, because like you said, it's very mm-hmm. complex.
And broad, yes.
And I wouldn't claim to say that I sure. understand it completely, but from my knowledge is like the oppression of women is kind of linked to the subjugation of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, it has strong ties in linguistics as well, because we refer to Earth as Mother Earth.
Mm.
And then we, you know, conquer it and, you know, people, they rape the Earth and they yeah. take it, you know, take advantage of it and use it. And so the kind of linguistics link between women and nature is very strong in our culture. And then it also exists within this patriarchal, hierarchical system. And so if man has dominated nature, then it would kind of follow that it's dominated women as well.
So illuminated. The reason that the word stuck out to me so much, because I had heard it peripherally, but I had never dived into it. I had never had a reason to up until this point in a lot of ways, was because of so much of the social justice components that have come out of eco art and environmental art. Like even if it's sustainable, who is it sustainable for? And even if you're using natural materials, the natural materials that you're getting, who are they taking away from? And so social justice, which is something that's dear to my heart, has always been incorporated in environmentalism. And so when I heard ecofeminism, I was hoping that it was another component of that, which it was, but it was also metaphorical and linguistic, like you just said, that mm-hmm. even inherent or intrinsic in our own language is this concept that nature is feminine. And because of that, the things that we do, especially the pejorative or the detrimental things, might sometimes spool out of that consciousness.
Right.
What I have never thought of that, and I didn't while I was researching. That was a great answer, a great answer. Do you have social justice components to your work or social justice components to your practice?
Yeah, I would say it's embedded
sure.
within it. It might not be super apparent on the surface,
absolutely.
But I believe, especially like with my last installation, I'm trying to kind of allude to that through how AI has impacted nature, but mm-hmm. also the communities where it exists
exactly
as well.
Exactly right. Because social justice is really just an exercise of how we treat each other, you know,
right.
top level or low level. And so the art would absolutely have that language embedded to in it. I'm glad you said that. But you brought up, and this is a hotbed issue. And sometimes I'm almost even afraid to broach the topic with artists because so many people are so divisive and passionate about it. You brought up artificial intelligence, AI. I'm just going to ask it in a broad way so that you're not pigeonholed in an answer. How do you feel about AI when it comes to your practice or art or even broader than that?
It's a difficult topic. I guess, you know, there can be ways where it's helpful, especially like in ecology. Some things that I've heard about is like it's helpful for, you know, tracking fires. It's helpful for species identification and, you know, managing endangered species and things like that. But I think overall it is detrimental sure. just kind of across the board to people and to nature and everything in general.
Absolutely.
And especially, you know, if you look at where these data centers are placed, it's almost always in marginalized communities that are already at risk. And it just poses so many ecological issues that, of course, impact us as well as every other living thing.
Yeah, there's a Jurassic Park, which is one of my favorite movies just because it's nostalgic to me. Even the Jeep I drive looks like one of those Jurassic Park Jeeps. And Jeff Goldblum has curated my whole style over here. He says, Ian Malcolm says in the movie, you know, we've asked ourselves, can we do this? We haven't broached the topic of should we do this?
Right.
And AI, I think, is in some ways an incredible tool, but there has to be a lot more regulation around it, specific ways in which we use it, or maybe let's not use it at all. I don't know.
Right. And, you know, and for me, especially when it comes to art, isn't this what we want to be doing? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like if we're making these robots, shouldn't they be doing the stuff we don't want to be doing? Like,
that's a great
I don't
point.
Know.
Yeah, let's give them the laundry
yeah.
and let's keep the good stuff. I heard that. That's a perfect segue to this. Nature versus technology, as I've read, is a key part of your work, even mm-hmm. from some of the, like one of the shows that you have that incorporate, what is it called? Entangled?
Entangled Ecologies.
Yes.
My installation.
Absolutely. That installation, it's dealing with found materials. Well, they're all found materials, I guess, but it's dealing with natural materials and technological materials. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
What does that narrative mean to you?
So for that installation, I'm using vine as well as electrical cord.
Sure.
And they were all, you know, foraged or gathered or donated from people, especially the electrical cords.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to talk about how nature and technology are so intertwined. You know, you kind of can't have one without the other. Natural systems have provided the resources for technological systems, and technological systems also, you know, help nature in some ways of tracking things and but this entanglement should be more balanced than it is. And right now there's this huge imbalance between things. And the technology that we use and all the systems around that kind of are causing a lot of harm to nature in general.
Yeah, you always think of Big Sugar in South Florida. You are gathering sugar from natural resources to make a manufactured product that the waste from then contaminates the Everglades for years. You know,
right.
It is just such a, not even a cognitive dissonance, it's an indecent coincidence or, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's horrible. Great point that, you know, the balance of nature and technology kind of seems trite and recycled, but the fact that it's weighted to one side when that side needs the other side more than the other side needs it is a really complex and interesting question. And it brings up consumption or, you know, in our world, overconsumption. I heard you say in one of your answers that when you're foraging for stuff, you make sure not to take too much because you want to leave some of it. Why is consumption such an issue? Or overconsumption?
Yeah, overconsumption just in general just leads to so much waste. You know, yeah. we have the resources to support our planet, and yet we take so much and leave so little that there's people that go without, or there's animals that go without, or plants, you know. So especially within my practice, I try to follow the rules of indigenous practices that I've learned, especially that I've been reading from, like, teachings from Robin Wall Kimmerer. Mm-hmm. She's a biologist and also a writer, and her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, I learned a lot about the honorable harvest, which means, like, taking no less than 10% of the resources that are there.
Yeah. And just to juxtapose that with your work directly, you, as I said in the intro, you are really becoming a premier eco-artist in this state. I mean, in the past 10 years, you've had like 15 or 16 exhibitions, you know. And for people not in the art world, an exhibition is not just something that you can stumble on. And so not only are you working, not only are you putting your stuff out there, but you're actually becoming very celebrated too. If I'm not mistaken, you have a residency coming up in Oregon that you're preparing for now?
Yeah. The first one actually is in New York.
Oh, in New York.
I'm sorry.
So you have two of them coming up.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the Birdcliff Residency.
What is that exactly?
It's a communal residency in Woodstock, New York. Gotcha. And so I'm going to be going there, and there's going to be a bunch of different artists, visual artists, performance artists, writers. So I'm really excited to learn from other artists and also just to experience a different ecological area and come in contact with plants that I've never seen before.
And so then the other one is the Verdancy Project?
Yes.
That's the one in Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay. Great, great. Well, congratulations to both of those. Let me ask you something. What is your background, Marie? How did you get into art? Have you always been an artist? Did you start in a different discipline? I hear so many artists say, well, you know, I started as a dancer, but then that reflex taught me this. What is it about art outside of just your specific art that drew you?
Yeah, I think, I guess I feel like personally everyone's an artist. So
absolutely.
I would say that, of course, I was an artist too from the beginning, just like everybody is. But I was always encouraged by my parents to just get to know the land around me. I was always, you know, building forts with my sisters out of natural materials. And we would create systems of exchange. So we were making little crafts with things that we found. And I think that material manipulation definitely informed what I do now.
Mm.
So I always had that sort of a practice. But when I first started college, you know, I was under the impression that I had to work with canvas and paint and, like, that's what it meant to be an artist. But once I went to FSU, you know, my world kind of opened up, and they really informed me that, like, your work can be more conceptual. It can work with any kind of material. You don't have to just stick with this traditional path.
Well, as a contemporary art guy, well, as somebody who heads a contemporary art gallery, oftentimes the narrative is just as potent as the work.
Right.
And so I love that people are being exposed to that. Moreover, the thing that makes an artist like you so cool is the fact that the work is sound and the narrative is sound. And every now and then we get the two worlds dancing, and you are just really a great example of that. Where are you from? Are you from Florida?
Yeah, I'm from many different places in Florida, but primarily I would say Cocoa Beach, because that's where I spent the most time. But I've lived in, you know, Orlando and Miami and Gainesville. But
so you've
this
always
is the farthest north I've ever lived.
Tallahassee, right? Tallahassee's the farthest north anybody's ever lived in Florida. And I love Tallahassee, but it's up there. Some people say it's just South Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The publications that you've been a part of have been really cool too. For such a young artist, you have been in a lot of publications. When I was doing my research, I saw that you were in all these publications. Here's my question, because I didn't have a chance to click on them and read them. Are you published because they're discussing your work? Are you published because you're discussing some issue? Or have you ventured into, like, cover art for publications? Or has it been a mixture of all three?
So I've yet to have them be writing about my work. That's a future ambition.
Absolutely.
But they're mostly, like, magazines that talk about ecological issues. For example, I was recently in Ecotheo Review, which is kind of based around ecological topics. And so my artwork complemented the writings that other people submitted.
Gotcha. Have you ever done any cover work?
I have, actually. Have you been, for a couple of textbooks, I believe they were. It was a long time ago. I wouldn't say that was my best work, but...
Well, I'm going to say this, I guess, because it's... because it's big corporations? Like textbooks?
Oh, okay. No, it was smaller, but...
That is so many artists' grandest ambition, to do the cover art for something. Because it's like a musical artist getting their song attached to some advertisement. It's something that makes your work live even longer than you could have made it live. And like I always say on this programming, art is some way to escape death. But your art isn't. Your art is returning back to its own grave, which makes you even cooler. Moe, between your work and how you have helped me spool out this conversation, you have been the perfect guest for today. I'm glad that I could expose another audience to you, because they will soon know your name just like the rest of the world will. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you all at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time. Bye-bye.